At the 2017 American Farm Bureau Convention, we are talking today with Hannah Thompson-Weeman from Animal Agriculture Alliance. Hannah, let's talk a little bit here in 17. It's a new year, but the agenda for our friends over on the anti-animal agriculture side of the road seems to be the same.
Yes, absolutely. The tactics that we see to just end animal agriculture, which really is the ultimate goal of all of these animal rights organizations that the Alliance has spent 30 years tracking, they always find new ways to push that goal and to find ways to make food more expensive, drive up cost to consumers. But really their ultimate objective, which is putting farmers and ranchers out of business, hasn't changed. They've gotten savvier and savvier over the years, which makes it a challenge for us to get out ahead of their messaging. But that's what the Alliance is here to do. It's actually our 30th anniversary in 2017. So we're celebrating three decades of working on behalf of America's farmers and ranchers.
One of the things we talked about at the tail end of 2016 was the vote in Massachusetts. As you've had a chance to really look at the ramifications of that, what will that vote mean in what we have to deal with in the days to come for farmers, ranchers, for folks producing livestock products?
It's just an unfortunate reality that our general consumer is very disconnected from what we do in animal agriculture. They haven't seen it. They haven't been exposed to it when there's such a slim percentage of the population that is actively engaged on a daily basis in farming and ranching. That leaves your general purchaser of animal products being two, three, maybe even more generations from the farm, and they've never seen what we do with their own eyes. So unfortunately, they're very susceptible to the myths and misinformation being spread by groups in this Massachusetts example, like HSUS. They found a place where there isn't a very large, definitely not a commercial, large-scale agriculture industry there in Massachusetts. They got language on the ballot that was very generic and would be hard for someone to disagree with if they didn't know what it was actually saying. So unfortunately, it should be a big red flag for us in the industry to know that they're going to continue to do this, and we have to find new, innovative ways to amp up our volume and how we're communicating with consumers. And I think one thing that happened in Massachusetts that will be a positive for us moving forward is the connections that were made with the anti-poverty community. That's a huge source of people who have a vested interest in these same issues that we're talking about, because what they're trying to do is raise the cost of food. They want to make it less efficient to force farmers to put up new barns, new equipment. We know not all farmers are going to be able to afford to do that. It also makes their production costs go up, makes them able to produce less. With supply and demand, if you have less of a supply, the cost is going to go up. So we found a really strong advocate in the anti-poverty community who they care just as much as we do about making sure that people have access to safe, affordable food. And animal protein, you know, eggs specifically, in this Massachusetts example, are an excellent source, a low-cost source of protein. So driving the cost up for that is going to have a huge impact on low-income people who are already making tough choices. So I think the lesson we learned in Massachusetts of the strength in that partnership will hopefully foster more dialogue moving forward of how we can find alternative audiences who could work with us on this and speak about it from a different angle.
I guess what if we see this type of an initiative come up at another state here in the next year or so, that gives us maybe a leg up on how we actually deal with it and put money toward a responsible opposition.
Exactly. And the responsible opposition is really key, because what happened here in Massachusetts is a lot of producer organizations were very shy about putting a lot of money into this because of what happened in California. In the California Prop 2 battle, the industry put in millions and millions and millions of dollars and still ended up losing that vote. So the industry was very wary of doing that again here in Massachusetts. But I think if we can find strategic ways to not spend a lot of money but still reach the right people and have a stronger, more strategic and unified message earlier in the dialogue, we can hopefully be successful in combating these things moving forward.
I think one of the things we've learned, and we've seen that with the Massachusetts vote, with the California vote, and even the GMO debate in Vermont, is that you've got these states that are trying to dictate to producers outside of their state borders.
Yes, that is a huge part of this. And this one in Massachusetts even included that in their piece of legislation, that it applies to not only farms and ranchers in Massachusetts, but any products sold in Massachusetts. So they've now put that burden on the retailers to have to go out and verify with all their suppliers that even if they're not in Massachusetts, if those eggs end up on the shelf in Massachusetts, they have to fall under this new law. So that's another audience that's being burdened by this unduly, is the retailers who are now asked to verify all of this before they can sell it in their stores. stores within Massachusetts. But that is a huge challenge, and that has been something that the industry has used to try to challenge these laws, is that you can't have voters in one state dictate how farmers in another are able to produce their commodities. And that's why HSUS targets these states, because they know they'd have a lot tougher sell going to a state like Iowa, a state that has a strong egg industry and has legislators who are connected to constituents who do raise these commodities and have a little bit more sway in that area. So that's exactly why they choose the states that they do, is if they can get those small states like Massachusetts to pass these kind of initiatives and have them include provisions that include farmers and ranchers from outside of that state, they can have a big impact by doing that. And they realize that. And that's one grounds that's going to be used to challenge this, is that something they should be able to do under the Constitution?
Now, with all that said, what is a strategy, a winning strategy for animal agriculture? What's out there that we can generate that'll be the right thing to do?
What we really believe is the biggest winning strategy for animal agriculture is being united and standing together. And it doesn't matter what kind of product you produce, whether it's organic, conventional, some kind of niche market, small, local, big, farmers market, commodity production, whatever you're doing, we're all producing animal products. So at the end of the day, we're all going to find ourselves targeted by those activist groups. Because today, they might be pushing certain systems because their main objective today is targeting that large-scale agriculture. But at the end of the day, if you are producing products that come from animals, they do not want you to be in business either. So that's the biggest thing that I see that we need to do within the animal agriculture industry, is get out of our own way and work together and realize that we can market our own products, we can appeal to different values that consumers have without disparaging one another. No matter what choice you want to make in the grocery store, whatever fits in your budget and your values, you should feel confident that it is safe, that it is good for your family, and that there is a farmer and rancher somewhere that produced it for you to purchase. So that's the biggest thing that we want to carry into 2017 at the Alliance, is that message that we're all in this together. No matter what we do, how we're different, it's more important of how we're the same. And if we're taking care of animals, taking care of livestock, and producing food for consumers, we need to focus on those commonalities versus our differences.
Right. One of the things I know you're talking to Farm Bureau members with here in Phoenix is this strategy that some of our animal activists have used in trying to tie religious ideas to their message. How do we respond to that?
That is one of the biggest things that people's eyes get huge and their jaws drop whenever we bring that up, and they just can't believe that that is something that these activists are doing. And unfortunately, it is. About 10 years ago, one of the speakers at one of the national animal rights conferences said that religion is really the last holdout. As long as people don't feel like it's against their religion and their morality to eat animals, they're still going to do it. So what the activists are doing is they're trying to find ways to get religious institutions to take statements against, again, right now they're focusing on, quote, unquote, factory farms, large-scale agriculture, and that's where it starts. So they say, you know, we've seen pamphlets about Lent from all across the country, from rural Ohio, from suburban D.C., and from somewhere further out west. They were all the same pamphlet that were talking about how eating is a moral act, and one thing you should do this Lent is give up meat one day a week. Let's make it Monday. Does that start sounding familiar? You know, it's the Meatless Mondays movement disguised within this religious context. They also had a speaker, HSUS had a speaker at their annual conference talking about how the animal rights movement message is God's message, and that she is the church out there because she's speaking out against eating animals. So it's things like that, that they know that the general person does view themselves as spiritual, maybe doesn't have a, you know, doctorate level understanding of theology. So they cherry pick certain pieces of scripture, take things out of context, misrepresent what things were actually saying in order to give people this idea that eating meat is something they should feel guilty about and that they should limit. So we have done a lot of research into this. We're working on some different things, some message testing, some pieces that we could get out there that explains the issue. We had three experts in this area speak on a panel at our summit last year about this issue. And we're going to be talking about that, as you mentioned, here at Farm Bureau, and sharing what we're seeing, what these trends are, and what people can do locally. Because, again, we've heard examples from this from local churches all across the country. Our president and CEO, Kay, had a story about a couple years ago when her church started promoting Meatless Mondays, and she had a sit-down meeting with some of the church leadership. And it's those things that have to be happening at the local level as well. And a lot of times people feel uncomfortable doing that, or they think it's just a one-off, so they let it go. But whenever these things come up, we all locally have to do our part to connect with the people in our own communities.